clubhouse.
Welcome to Interview with a Podcast, a Pod Clubhouse original. I'm Caroline from Daily Review.
And I'm Mike from Pop Culture Review. Each week on Interview with a Podcast, we sit down for a chat with a podcast or website and its creators.
Here at Pod Clubhouse, our main goal is to create a community of collaboration among podcasters and their friends.
If someone has something to say, has a passion for a topic, we want the Clubhouse to be a way for content creators to find their voice.
Through Interview with a Podcast, we'll be able to highlight a diverse array of podcasts from TV to music, movies to comedy.
Maybe it'll be a sports podcast one week, or a DIY home projects podcast. Hopefully we can help you discover the next must-listen-to true crime podcast.
Each episode gives you, the listener, a chance to meet and decide if their podcast is a fit for you.
That's right. We've got two goals here. With Interview with a Podcast, we hope to be a destination for listeners to get curated podcast recommendations. And for content creators, we hope to be an outlet to increase visibility and listenership. It's the rising tide lifts all boats approach to collaboration.
If there's a podcast you think we should feature on Interview with a Podcast, send us a DM and we'll see if we can set up an interview.
With that, I think it's time we get to this week's guest.
This is Paul.
This is Mike. Welcome to Interview with a Podcast. Tonight we're talking with Stephen Kramer Glickman from The Nighttime Show. Stephen, thank you so much for coming out with us and speaking with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
How are you finding quarantine life? Has it completely upended your life, or was this pretty much what your life was like beforehand and people are just catching up to you?
No, I definitely, like, I would spend my days, some of my days, indoors writing and stuff. And then at nighttime, usually I would, go out and see friends or go and do stand up or go do our podcast live. We do our show live on stage, usually once a month. And so, like, there's a lot of planning that goes into that. And so that's usually kind of what I'd be doing. I also go to the movies a lot.
I miss the movies too.
God, oh, so depressing. So yeah, just going out to eat and like sitting in a restaurant and getting a basket of bread, like all that kind of stuff, all the things that are fun about living in Los Angeles, and then, or just living in the world, so yeah, that's been some adjusting for sure. And the project that I was working on right before the quarantine just got got shut down completely, shuttered, and where there's been no movement, where you just kind of have to go back to quiet time, which is weird.
I find any really amount of quiet time with myself is extremely uncomfortable. Turns out I am not a giant fan of myself. So yeah, this has been an adjustment for me for sure.
No, yeah. Mirrors in Mike's house.
They're all flipped over. I'm in permanent Shiva. Just my hair, my face. I look like the Wolf Man, like got stood up and dumped. It's not good. It's not good at all. So on Interview with the Podcast, we like to speed date. That's kind of our ideas, kind of putting podcasts together with listeners and kind of introduce, new shows that maybe they don't know about. Now, people know you really from Big Time Rush and Storks. That's how I knew you when this interview opportunity came up. Talk about what made you want to come into like the podcasting world, because you've been doing it for a while. Can you give us kind of like the story of how you came about it?
Of course. It came up in a pretty funky way. One of my best friends is this comedian and podcast host named Kate Quigley, and she hosts a podcast called Date Fails. And I was a guest on her show. We're talking like 5 years ago, and it was my first podcast, and I loved it, and I wanted to do every episode with her. And she was, at the time, she was at kind of a bullshit network, it was a pretty small place. And I knew that there was a bigger place that was, looking for some shows and looking for some content. And so I was like, look, I want to come on with you and co-host this show, and let's bring it somewhere bigger. And I took her, we went together to a place called Sideshow Network, which ended up going out of business, but we brought it to them, and she was really down. She's still doing her show. She does it every week, but she's very down with having comedians as the guests on every week. And I really wanted to like push the limits of like who you should be having on your show. So our first guest on our first episode was the woman that outed Donald Sterling. that V. Stiviano, the woman that had dated Donald Sterling and outed him, like recorded him when he was the head of the Clippers and like exposed him for being a giant racist. And our first episode went crazy and was like all over social and all over, you know, all over TMZ and all over the place. And I was like, wow, this is like a really fun thing. And we did it. We worked, her and I worked together for about a year. We did about a year's worth of shows and it was really fun. But like over time, I think I really wanted to like keep getting bigger and crazier guests. And she's a real stand-up comedian who performs every single night of the week and is really close friends with like Joey Diaz and all the big stand-ups. And so she wanted to do more comedian stuff and like more interviews with comedians. So I said, you know, maybe I should kind of go off on my own. She can go off and continue doing her show. I wasn't really sure what to do. But I had been doing the nighttime show, my podcast, I'd been doing it as a live show for, at that point, about a year. And it had just been a live stand-up show where comedians come on the show, they perform, and then I interview them on the couch. And I would do like an opening monologue, you know, like a Tonight Show monologue. And I had like a bunch of great writers that were like writing monologue jokes for me and writing bits for me to do with the different comics. And we had like Tom Segura on the show. We had Tiffany Haddish. We had Billy Gardell and all sorts of wonderful, like, you know, big, wonderful comics, you know, come through and do our show. And then, like, when this thing ended with my friend Kate, and suddenly I knew how to podcast, I knew how to book a show, I was like, let's just do the nighttime show, the live show we've been doing, but let's just do it as a podcast. Let's stop having stand-up comedians come up and perform and then get interviewed, and let's bring up celebrities on stage in front of the audience. Let's use our Saturday night show at the Improv on Melrose in the main room with 200 people in the audience that we're always getting. We have a big enough audience, we can just not have comedians and just get celebrities. And it was kind of a scary switch, to be honest, because you're kind of betting on yourself and you're like, you don't want to fail and go backwards and like have to go back to the way that it was before. Like, you want to hope that people will actually continue to come out to the show and that the celebrities that you can get are big enough every month that you're not going to have an empty audience. Luckily, my friend Matt Walker, who I've been friends with for 15 years, Matt Walker is like a super genius and like knows how all the technology and stuff works. And he got together with one of the guys, Josh, who works for Kevin Smith and would do Kevin Smith's live podcast show. And then we all like teamed up and like made sure that the show would be successful. Our first live podcast that we did at the Improv was Lisa Loeb got up and sang Stay to open the show. Then we interviewed her. Then we had Kate Flannery and Oscar Nunez from The Office come up and do a little mini reunion.
Nice.
Then we had E.G. Daily from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. He played his girlfriend in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. She came up and she performed, did a song, and then did an interview. And then Rachel True from The Craft was on the show that night, and so was Kendall from Big Time Rush. And it was way too many guests. It was like a 3-hour show, but we sold out. The room was packed, and then we kind of merged podcasting with people that didn't want to be on the live show with people that were okay with being on the live show. And we would always ask for the live show first, and then if they said, no, I'm not really comfortable being on stage, then we would say, well, would you consider doing an interview, just you and I? We did 2 years of doing the show in that way at the Hollywood Improv on Saturday night at 10 p.m. with the most insane guests and cast reunions. And the things that we pulled off in those 2 years, of doing the podcast live. To me, they are remarkable pieces of what my life is. I know I'm like over talking, but it's like...
No. I mean, I think it really helps form kind of how you got to where you are now, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've gotten to do some stuff in that live show, like, that's really insane. Like, for Valentine's Day, like, a couple years ago, like, last year, maybe, or the year before, we had Savage Garden, Darren Hayes from Savage Garden, come up on stage and sing Truly Madly Deeply with an acoustic guitar while two couples had a slow dance-off on stage. And then the winner of the slow dance-off got a $250 gift certificate to Katsuya, the sushi restaurant, and the other couple got a $100 gift certificate to Shakey's Pizza. To have all of those things happen, and for that not even to be the only thing that happens in a night, was just insane, man. It was just insane. I'm lucky that I have the people that work on my show with me. I mean, Matt Walker, of course, you know, is an amazing producer and a great friend and a great co-host. And then Mike Black is a stand-up comedian and comedy writer who has written for everyone from, like, Andrew Dice Clay to John Panette. He was, like, John Panette's writer for a long, long time. He's our announcer on our show and knows everything about movies and nerdy stuff. And then Mike Glazer was nominated for an Emmy for writing A Night of Too Many Stars, and he writes our show and is usually our man in the audience, where we have him with a microphone taking questions from audience members throughout the live show.
Yeah, I see him listed as the man of the people.
Yeah, he really is. He has his own podcast, Weed and Grub, which is a podcast like about marijuana and food. And he writes for Rolling Stone and for stuff like that. He's in for High Times, all that kind of stuff. So it's like everyone that we work with, the four of us have a really damn good time, and we've had some crazy opportunities because of it. You know, it's been very cool.
It sounds like a team of ringers.
Oh man. Seriously, we've tried out other people, and we've had times where someone couldn't make it, so we've had to bring someone else in, and it can be difficult. We're lucky that we've got some folks in the wings that have been able to show up, like Brent Weinbach, Ryan Stout, and Tanya Chisholm, all the three of, and Kate Quigley. Those four have subbed in at different times on different episodes and stuff. And you know what? My girlfriend actually has subbed in on a few episodes. We had her on an interview with Janice Dickinson. My girlfriend is a model, and she's been in that industry for a long time. And I knew that, like, two guys sitting with Janice Dickinson was not going to get very much out of her. And, you know, my girlfriend knows a lot about that business. And so she was able to ask a lot of questions, have a lot of insight into things. And in the middle of our interview, Janice Dickinson opened up for the first time about being sexually assaulted by Bill Cosby. And that was fucking insane. So like, really crazy.
I remember that coming out. I just didn't realize it was your podcast.
Yeah, it was something else, man.
I was going to just talk about her being really mean on the early days of America's Next Top Model, but holy shit. Oh. That took it to that was a little bit more serious. Wow, you took it to the next level. You got the good scoop.
Oh man, there's been some weird moments with people dropping some real stuff where you're like, "Whoa, okay, all right." Didn't think we were getting that.
Do you follow a format, or do you just kind of take a guest and kind of guide or the show, given, you know, their background, what they want to talk about, that kind of stuff?
To be honest, we try really hard to get people to talk about the beginning of their life and their, like, their origin story. We always try to hit that point, you know, with people. We want to know where someone came from, where they're, you know, what they struggled with, you know, starting out. Like, that I always feel like is kind of like a nice base to hit. Then we usually try to bring up a role or something that they forgot that they were in, something really obscure and strange. We try to do that so that we can get them to talk about something that maybe they've never talked about before on a podcast, you know, just to surprise them a little bit. Because there's certain people that you get an interview with and it's amazing, but then you find out later it's the same interview that they've given, you know, with a bunch of other people, and you're like, ah, damn it. You want something new and different. And so we always try to grab something a little, odd and strange. We interviewed Michael Gross from Family Ties.
Sure. Stephen Keaton.
Did you ask him about his beard?
Oh, God.
He had the best beard in the game, man, in the 80s.
He did. He really did. He taught us all about what beard should look like, you know?
And then gave it all up.
Oh, yeah. I said to him, Michael Gross, there is something that I feel like we need to talk about. An actor who played your son that has really changed the whole world. You know, like if it, you know, his presence in movies and things, just, you know, in entertainment, his presence in entertainment changed entertainment forever. Of course, I'm talking about Vanilla Ice when you played his father in Cooler Than Ice. So what was that like?
Oh my God.
And Michael Gross was like, are you fucking kidding me? That's what you're coming with? Cooler Than Ice? Like, who wants, why would you want to know about Vanilla Ice? And then he told a bunch of Vanilla Ice stories, and it was awesome. Just what you're sitting around waiting for, you know? And one of my favorites was Doug Jones came on the show, and we talked about Shape of Water and Hellboy, Pan's Labyrinth, and all this, you know, wonderful stuff. But then someone in the audience asked about his role as Billy in the movie Hocus Pocus. And he told the story of, like, he was a zombie. He was this zombie character in Hocus Pocus. And he has, like, his lips are sewn up, and he cuts his lips open, and a moth flies out. And it wasn't CG. It was a real moth. And they had to put a retainer into his mouth to stop him from salivating because a live moth was in his mouth, and then they would put the prosthetic on top of his mouth. And the first time that they did it, his mouth was salivating so much from knowing that there was a fucking moth in his mouth. When they finally opened his mouth, the moth just rode a trail of mud out of his mouth, which was just so disgusting.
That's going to cost extra.
That's a story we had never heard before, and it happened because we hit him with, we got something weird. We got something weird on him.
Yeah, he's like the sweetest guy also. He's so oddly shaped. He's so tall. I met him last year doing Discovery Press. I was like, this guy's going to be just like a complete freak show and everything. He was like the sweetest guy ever. Just on the red carpet, had like 15 minutes with him, and it was awesome. He was just like the coolest guy. It was really...
Such a sweet guy. So nice. What one thing that we used to do on the show that we don't do anymore is this is going to sound really messed up. In early episodes of the show, like the first 30 of the show, we had a friend, this guy named Robbie Carlisle, who was this little fat creature person. And he would come on the show, and we would give him the worst questions possible. The most embarrassing, horrible questions to ask. The stuff that, like, if you ran into Joey Fatone from NSYNC, like, you would want to ask him, but, like, you shouldn't ask him. So we would give those questions to Robbie, and then we would go, oh, I think Robbie has a question. And then he would read off one of the questions that we wrote for him. And it would be like, when you were having sex with your fans' moms, was Lance Bass having sex with their dads?
Oh, my God.
And Joey Fatone would just be like, you gotta be kidding. Like, he would just be like, no. oh my God, why are you asking me this? And like, we would just put him in the worst position. He ended up leaving. Robbie ended up quitting the industry and moving away. He just moved away, stopped talking to all of us. And now all those questions have to be asked by us. We try to ask them still. We still ask.
I mean, listen, the promise is changing lives. You're not saying whether you're changing them for the better or worse.
Exactly.
When you guys are going to book your guests every week or, you know, as far ahead as you tape, what are you thinking about when you're doing it? Is it you're waiting for people to ask to be on the show, or you're just going through your Rolodex of, you know, funny friends? Like, what's your process for picking guests every week?
We put together lists. You want to hear the list? I have the list.
Yeah, we do.
Here's the list. I'll give you a couple names off of where we're currently at. There's always like a master list of people who are like, oh my God, it'd be so amazing if we could get Fred Willard, you know, to come do the show. Like, we love Fred Willard, Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman. And it took 2 years, but we finally got him to come do the show, and it was amazing. And same thing with Doug Jones. It took almost 2 years of, like, we would call his manager, and we would go, we'd love to have Doug Jones on the show. And then he'd go, well, he's not available. You know, and then we'd go, okay, well, you know, we just had this person, and I know they worked together at one point. So what a lot of times what we'll do is we'll take someone who's been on the show, and then we'll look at their credits and see who else they've worked with. And then we'll go to someone that they've worked with, to like the manager or the publicist for someone they've worked with, and just say, hey, you know, we had Ashley Greene from Twilight on the show. You know, can we get Kristen Stewart to come do it? And, you know, it's been a no so far, but you kind of hope that, like, those people are still in touch, right, and that right. the guest had such a good time that then they would turn and go, oh, it was great for me. You should go do it.
Yeah, they didn't ask any appropriate sex questions at all while I was on the show. You should definitely go do it. That guy moved away. He's not on the show anymore.
Right, that guy.
You know, I got to give it up to Joey Fatone. Joey Fatone has now done the podcast 3 times, 1 live and 2 recorded podcasts. So he was down enough with us screwing around with him that, like, it was okay for us to, like, we survived it. We all got through it.
I mean, that's the ultimate, though, right? You always talk about you don't want to meet your heroes. Not that Joey Fatone's necessarily a hero of yours, but you always worry that they're not going to have as good a sense of humor as you hope that they would have. And then when they do, it's like magic.
You know? Oh, yeah.
I recall he was on, like, a Robot Chicken episode where they were pretty tough on him. So I'd imagine he's got a pretty good sense of humor.
He's very funny. When we finished doing the first podcast interview, everyone was clearing out, and he turned to me and was like, what are you doing now? And I was like, no, nothing. I don't know, I was going to get some food. And he was like, you want to go to Hooters? And I was like, are you kidding me? Yes, of course I want to go to Hooters with Joey Fatone. And so, like, we went to Hooters on Hollywood Boulevard, him, me, and his manager, and had dinner. I would tell a bad up story, and then he would one up it, and his stories were 10 times whatever I had. We just kind of did this all night. Like, it was so cool. He's one of the coolest guys. That guy is amazing. He's a phenomenal dude.
I really grew to like him because he became a semi-regular on Impractical Jokers. And I'm a New York guy, you know, even though they're from Staten Island and not Queens, I was able to appreciate his sense of humor just from being on that show so often.
Oh, hell yeah. So, like, on the top of the list, the golden people that we wait for and hope for. Frank Oz is on the list.
Nice. Good.
Lance Henriksen from Alien and Predator and Terminator. We are currently working very hard to see if we can get him for the show. Chuck Norris is, like, way up there for me. Gene Simmons is a big one. Goldblum would be huge. Christopher Lloyd, Bruce Campbell, you know, stuff like that. I was backstage at the Annie Awards, at the Animation Awards this year, and Christopher Lloyd was the big special guest. He was just sitting by himself eating Kentucky Fried Chicken. And I walked over and I was like, do you mind if I sit with you for a minute? And he was like, okay. I sat there with him for a little while and I was like, did you get Kentucky Fried Chicken? just for you, did someone get you Kentucky Fried Chicken? And he was like, it's in my contract that I get Kentucky Fried Chicken. And so, like, I sat and had kind of an interview with him where I asked him about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I always feel like with a celebrity person like that, if you come to them with the most obvious, if you come to them with Back to the Future, you know, it's going to ruin the possibility of getting them for anything or building any. They're just going to dismiss you, kind of. But if you come in with something kind of weird, let them talk about something kind of weird or like, an older credit, something that, let them talk about Who Framed Roger Rabbit for a while.
Taxi.
I brought up Back to the Future, and then I asked him if we could have him on the show. He said, on the condition that we drove to him, we can interview him, but he lives in Santa Barbara. And so we said, yeah, we'll fucking drive to Santa Barbara for you, like, whenever. So now we're trying to, you know, see if we can get him for a phone interview, but it's hard. At least during this time period, people are at home and they don't have that much to do, and it's a little bit easier to go after people right now. But
when you go, you need to find a DeLorean and rent it for the.
Oh, God, that's my dream car, man. Like, and it's not even a great car. It doesn't even drive great, but man, do I want a DeLorean. That's a dream.
Here's some trivia. The actual DeLorean world headquarters is just a few miles away from my house right now.
No way.
Yeah, they are a small run car manufacturer, so they make maybe like a dozen, 20 cars a year, something like that. But they're all DeLoreans using the original parts, but modernized in some respects also.
Do they have a flux capacitor division at that headquarters, or is that like made in Mexico
that's,
or something?
That's completely underground. That's totally different. But yeah.
That is amazing. What? Wow, God. Well, I'm going to fly to where you are. Where are you?
Houston.
Oh, man. Mike, you're in New York.
I'm in New York. Yep.
How cool is that, that we can do this and be able to, like, this is just like a regular conversation that we're able to have. And it's like, everybody's all over the place. I love technologies. It's so cool.
It's a credit to your skill as a stand-up that you didn't come in super hot and hacky with Lloyd, like, you know, how's the chicken, Marty? You know, or do it like like on fire for him.
He would have just like stared at you.
Yeah, no way, man. There are two people that are famous that I have met in my life and career that I absolutely fucked it up. Could not keep it together. George Lucas, I met at a red carpet thing.
Whoa.
I said to him, the first thing out of my mouth was, when I was a kid, oh man, oh God, shit. That's all I said. And he just went, his face retracted into his body like a turtle. Like he just could not get away from me faster. It was so embarrassing. I couldn't put words together. It was too hard. It was too hard to talk to him. And then this past year, I was at the premiere for Secret Life of Pets 2, and I was on the carpet, and I was talking to somebody, and I saw Harrison Ford show up at the red carpet, and I was like, oh my God, it's Harrison Ford. He was like 20 feet away from me, and I was like, sweating. Like, I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm seeing Harrison Ford in real life, like in the sunlight of the world. I get to see him. Like, I can't believe, like, I was like fangirling. I couldn't deal with it. I turned around and I was talking to some people, and my buddy that I was there with, without me knowing, went over to Harrison Ford and was like, hey, will you take a picture with my friend? He's an actor and a voiceover guy. He was like, yeah, sure. And I didn't know this, and I was talking to a woman, and then I like suddenly saw like a lot of cameras start moving towards where I was, and I looked to my left, and like, just talking about this, my adrenaline has started pumping. And he comes up to the left of me, and he goes, hey kid, you want to take a picture? And I go, yeah, oh yeah, yeah. And he like puts his his arm around me, and we smile, and they take a picture of like a million pictures really quickly of the two of us, and then he goes, all right, I gotta I'm going to go watch this shit. Like, gave me a little punch on the shoulder and then walked away. And I was like, oh, no! Like, what just happened? That was the best. That was, like, one of the best moments I think I've ever... Oh, and when I met Mark Hamill the first time, I may have been brought to tears, or I may have started to freak out a little too much. Okay. But the second time I met Mark Hamill, I was funny, and I made him laugh. And I nailed it.
Of the three people you've just named, though, he may be the most accessible. You know, between Ford, Lucas, and Hamill, he may be the one that's easiest to keep your shit together over.
I don't know how I would do in an interview setting where we have to carry on a conversation for a long period of time.
Yeah.
It was at Stan Lee's memorial at the Chinese Theater. I was backstage in the alleyway. I was talking to somebody, and I was wearing a suit, and on my suit, I had a Hydra pin, like, on my lapel. The security guard goes, "Nice pin." And I go, "Thanks." And he goes, "It's cool seeing someone wear a Hydra pin." I go, "Yeah, it's funny because I'm a fan of Hydra, but I'm Jewish, so... You know, doesn't make it easy on us to be fans of those characters." And then I hear, like, there's someone to the right of me, but I hadn't seen who was to the right of me yet. And it was Mark Hamill. And he goes, "Well, why can't you be a fan of Hydra?" And I go, "Oh, because they're like kind of like super high tech Nazis." And he goes, wait a second. "Hydra are Nazis?" I go, Yeah, basically. And he goes, "You know, I voice Baron Zemo a lot, and I didn't even know that." And I go, "Look, Hamill, you only have one fandom that you have to know everything about. Okay, right, you don't have to worry what were numbers were on Wolverine's dog tags. All right, let someone else deal with that shit." And he was like, "Ha, ha, ha, that's funny." And he walked away. And I was like, "I did it!" I walked backstage, go down the alleyway, past where he was. I walked backstage, and I turned to some lady that I kind of know, and I go, "You're not going to believe what just happened. I was at the fucking greatest moment ever." I go, "I'm in the alleyway. I'm wearing this Hydra pin. Mark Hamill, and blah, blah, blah." As I'm telling the story, Wesley Snipes walks up next to me and goes, "That's a nice suit." And I go, "Thanks, Wesley. The point is, what I'm saying," and I just pretended like it was nothing. And he laughed so hard. And then I was like, "Okay, miss, person I'm talking to, I got to, you got to fuck off because I need to talk to Wesley fucking Blade Snipes." Him and I talked for a little while. I asked him to be on the podcast, like, immediately. He gave me his cell number, and then I texted him, and then nothing. 6 months later, he got My Name is Dolomite, that movie.
Oh, wow.
And yep. he texted me to let me know that he had gotten in the movie, and then was like, "I'm going to come out to LA soon, so when I come out, we should do the episode." And I was like, "Fuck yeah." And then nothing. It's a...
That's an accomplishment just to get that far, you know?
Man, oh God, that was one of the weirdest nights ever. And yeah, for sure.
It would have been awesome if the next day Hollywood Reporter cover page was Mark Hamill resigns from voice of Zemo.
over found evidence about the character's representation.
Like, Glickman fucking ruined it for everyone.
No!
Oh, that's so funny. So
it sounds like you like Star Wars, Steven. Is that a fair assessment?
You know, I did way more before the new trilogy of things. It definitely kind of fucked it up for me a little bit. You know, like, I'm a big fan of the original three. I've watched them, you know, a ridiculous amount of times, and I have, like, almost every single toy that was made in the 80s for Star Wars in a glass case, like a foot away from where I'm talking to you guys right now. And nice. I started collecting some more of their stuff over time, but the new movies kind of, they were fine or whatever. It was like a little too much. Maybe it just felt like a little little oversaturated and harder to deal with. I mean, I enjoyed the movies, but they were also a little hard to take. The fighting from people on the internet was really annoying and frustrating, and became too much to separate it all. It was just getting frustrating.
Oh, I understand. At some point I had identified myself to YouTube as a Star Wars fan, and so it thought, well, I'll just throw everything Star Wars at this guy. And it was all that shit that you're describing, and all of a sudden I'd be like, no, I don't even like Star Wars. Stop it! Don't send me that stuff anymore. I don't want to.
Wait,
hear
you
it.
Know they go by like Fandom Menace, like, and it's like a club like you pay dues to, and it's this whole internet troll subculture. It's so toxic.
A year and a half ago, I did an interview. I've co-hosted two other podcasts. One for that's a very serious show that has not come out yet, and we've recorded 15 episodes, but every person that's been on those shows are like, they're all huge, huge shows, and it's from a huge company, and I got paid to host the show, and it was like, it's a very serious subject. It's like about fighting up from failure in your life. It's a good show, but it's heavy. And our first guest on that show is Paul Feig. In the interview, I talked to him about Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. He talked about how he got really defensive, and you know, and how they, you know, they were coming for him, and you know, coming for the film before it had come out, and you know, went after them, and then how like Judd Apatow called him and was like, stop responding to people on Twitter, like, you're making the wrong choice, you need to stop arguing with people because it's gonna fuck your shit up. He really didn't take the advice very well and kind of did his own thing, and he regrets it, and he's tried to not be as vocal against, you know, fans or this or that. Where the fight there got tricky on Ghostbusters was, he said, and I'm not quoting, but he said, if you don't like this movie, it's because you don't like women. It was something like that. And the problem with doing that is then, of course, if you watched Ghostbusters, you know that it sucks. And that the original was amazing, and it's not a great movie. Like, it's not to say that the entire movie isn't great. It's just saying that large sections of that, there were parts of that movie that just weren't well done. There were issues with it. The problem that started happening with Star Wars is, it was like, if you don't like a character, or if you don't like a scene, or if you don't like this, then you're an asshole, or you don't respect people, or you don't this or that or whatever. And it was like, it just started messing up. That's never been part of the conversation when I was growing up. I was never like, if you don't like, you know, Chewbacca, you know, then you're a racist. Like, that was never, like, when I was a kid growing up, there was never a fight about anything.
Say one more goddamn thing about Ewoks. Say one more thing.
Say it. And it just, it really kind of messed up fandom for me a little bit with that. But I still love Star Wars. I mean, I always will. And you know what? We've gotten to do an interview with Ahmed Best, who played Jar Jar Binks in the films.
Really sweet guy. Really nice guy.
So nice. That was our first Star Wars interview. It led to us getting Mike Quinn on the show, who played Neem Nub.
Oh, nice.
Which was also super, super cool, which I did not realize that in Empire Strikes Back that it was not a man in a mask. It was not Return of the Jedi. It wasn't a man in a mask. That was a puppet that was sitting in the front seat, which I did not, and never knew that. So that was pretty cool. And then the Star Wars interview that we did that was like a big deal for me was, we had Deep Roy on the show. And Deep Roy is kind of best known for being the Oompa Loompas in the remake of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
He's Scotty's helper.
He's Scotty's helper in Star Trek. And he was the guy that rode the snail in Neverending Story.
Ah, nice.
But the credit that I did not know very much about was that in Star Wars, he was an Ewok. And so I was like, okay, if he's an Ewok, maybe he'll have some stories, about it. And so we started talking to him, you know, on stage in front of like 200 people. he told us he was not an Ewok. He was 7 Ewoks in Return of the Jedi, which I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Then he tells us that he was in Jabba the Hutt's band in the place. He's
Snoodles whatever they call
it. Yeah, he's not Snice Snoodles. He's Droopy McCool.
Oh, okay.
The elephant keyboard player.
Yeah, I think Droopy McCool is the clarinet player.
Oh, okay.
That's interesting. And then he was like, also, I'm Yoda, and I was like, no, you're not. I was like, I know who Yoda is. Yoda is Frank Oz. And he was like, yeah, except for one, literally like 5 frames of the movie where Yoda has to walk behind Luke Skywalker. He said that he was the shortest little person, you know, on staff. So they dressed him up as Yoda, put a Yoda mask on him. And if you look up Deep Roy Yoda, there are photos of him holding the mask and sitting in Dagobah, and it was rad. I'm sure he's talked about it before. It was the first time I'd ever heard it. You know, we were able to pull photos and show them on stage in front of everybody. You know, it was cool. Like, it was just...
I see it now. I see what you're talking about.
So cool. So nerdy. We haven't had anyone from the Marvel Universe yet. That is a big one for me, and I don't know who the hell we're going to be able to get, but...
Tom Holland does everyone shit. He always wants to talk. He's got to be the guy you go for.
Gotta love Tom Holland. He's so great. They're all so good.
He may have watched Big Time Rush. He is right in that wheelhouse. I mean, you may be a touchstone for him.
All right, fine. Okay.
Tom. Come on our show.
I'll try. I'll at least try.
Can't get him, maybe Zendaya.
Yeah.
When you were talking about doing the live show and all the work you guys were putting into it and the work you're doing, you put into the episodes you do now, how do you balance that together with like your actual other working career, your acting jobs, doing stand-up? Like you just put out Voices in My Head last month, which was hysterical. I really, really enjoyed it. But like, where do you find time to write the material and go on stage and work the clubs? Are you doing that a lot? How do you balance that? That noise a lot. Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. That tracks.
yeah. A lot of drugs. No. What?
Here. Little bump here, little bump there, little bump here, little bump there.
Well, the nighttime show and the podcast, what's great about it is we only put out an episode a week. When we do our live show, we would have 4 guests on the show. And then Matt would then have to take time to cut up those guests. We'd record wraparounds, you know, for the shows. You know, we'd record commercials and stuff for it. And then he would take a week or two cutting that together. And then he'd put out, you know, one a week for the following 4 weeks. So we would really only have to realistically record once a month to be able to put out 4 episodes. But a lot of times, you know, we have other people who want to do shows and stuff that don't want to do the live show. So then we have those. The lucky thing about having a podcast for me has been that my life is incredibly inconsistent and very strange as this business is amazing but very, very all over the place. And having a podcast has been something I can keep tying myself back to. Sometimes it's been the only thing that I can talk about in my life. And other times I have lots of things that I am able to talk about. Like when I worked on Storks, I worked on Storks for 3 years. And for 2.5 of those 3 years, I couldn't talk about it out loud. And I really couldn't talk about it until the posters had come out. Even when the trailer came out, they said, keep your mouth shut. Because someone was let go from the movie after the trailer came out. So they were like, keep it on the DL until it's time. And having a podcast, it would give me something that I could do with my friends, that I could do publicly and put my time and energy into. And when I do meet someone that's famous or that I'm a huge fan of, they don't have to be famous. It can just be someone I'm a big fan of. Like, I was a fan of the movie Rad, which was like a terrible, terrible, terrible movie. But
is there a BMX bike on the cover of that movie?
There is. Okay. It's a movie about BMX bikes, and it is so stupid. I mean, the writing is horrendous. But I met the guy who was the star of that movie back in the day. It was him and Lori Loughlin. And I just randomly met him, and I was like, oh my God, we need to do a rad thing at our show and play one of the really terrible clips from this movie and just have a big laugh about it. And if you're down for it, let's, you know, let's do that. And he was down for it. And it was the same thing. There's been a few people that you meet in real life, and then you have an outlet where you can say, hey, I have something I want to do with you, and ask them to come and do something. And so with Storks, I had so much time where I was working, but I had no no outlet. So that was the outlet. And then with stand-up is usually something I do maybe about four times a month. I do it here in LA at the Improv and the Comedy Store and the Laugh Factory. I mean, I've been doing stand-up for 15, 16 years, but it is literally an outlet for me to work out new stuff and to talk and to have fun. And like, it is never, stand-up has never been like a big money-making thing. It, you know, like if someone is interested in maybe hiring me as a writer, or if they're interested in me, you know, for a role in something, or they're interested in just working with me in general, you know, for social media or for this or that, I can always be like, if you want to get a taste of what I'm like, come watch me do stand-up. And then I get to go and have fun and hop up on stage and do voices and tell funny stories and express myself in a real and fun way and feed that part of me that wants to be on stage and be in front of people. And I do that, and then, you know, it lets people see the what I would consider to be the best part of me, the truest part of me.
And that's the part that feeds into the fundraising that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely does, for sure.
What can you tell us about what you've been doing with the Hope From Home project?
You know, during this time, I think, you know, things are starting to maybe turn around now. But, you know, like you live in New York, like, you know, I'm sure it's pretty rough out there. I don't know how it is in New York right now. How is it?
It's a bit apocalyptic. I mean, they're about to start doing one of these, you know, reopening the states slowly things. But I don't know how smart that is. But even before then, the last 6 weeks or so, it's just odd. You know, you see all these pictures of like Times Square empty, all these places. It's just tumbleweeds blowing through the town.
Yeah, like I have a lot of friends that are Broadway actor people. You know, I've heard from most of them that Broadway isn't going to reopen its doors like into having, you know, shows back on stage till like September, November.
Yeah, I mean, most of the shows that are on Broadway probably will not reopen. They work on pretty slim margins for the first couple of years anyway. The insurance won't cover that at all. No, it's devastating.
Yeah, it's really horrible. It's a really horrible situation. And so what I've been kind of doing, which is not much, but I'll do the podcast and like try to put entertaining stuff out in the world just for, you know, because the podcast is free. So it just gives people something extra to do. I've been literally hand drawing animated shorts, which is an enormous pain in the ass, but doing making little weird cartoons and stuff from my stand-up, and then putting that kind of stuff out, which has been good. And then the album is out now for free on Pandora, so people can listen to it there for free. And then I do live streams on Instagram and on TikTok basically every day, which is the way that I can provide hope from home, is providing some entertainment and talking to people and having nice conversations with folks from different parts of the world. I'm very lucky that on Instagram, my following on Instagram is basically like 16 to 24. And the kids, these young people that follow me on there, they live in the US, but they also live in the Ukraine and in Iceland and in the Czech Republic and in Mongolia and Budapest and Thailand and all over the world, Austria, I mean, everywhere. So what's nice is I'll go live sometimes late at night, like, you know, 11 o'clock at night, and I'll talk to kids in the United Arab Emirates. And they're like, yeah, we're not allowed to leave our house. We're doing the same thing. And then you talk to somebody in like Iceland and they're like, yeah, we're locked down. We're not allowed to leave our house. And you're like, holy shit. It is horrible what we are all going through.
Right.
It is in some way fascinating. The entire world is going through it at once, which is, as far as I know, is not really something that's ever happened at this type of level. especially that you can communicate with people from all over the world and that they're all feeling the same thing. They're all struggling with the same feelings at the same time. So that's my contribution. That's what I can help with, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
You already named a bunch of examples. But when you think back on it, you've done the show, like the in-studio, like podcast now for, you know, 4 or almost 5 years. What stands out to you as maybe your best moment or most favorite moment or memorable moment from the podcast?
I know that I've already mentioned him, but the interview that we did with Joey Fatone, where we asked him about the manager.
Oh, the boy band manager? He did New Kids on the Block, too. Lou Pearlman. Yeah.
We asked him to tell us the Lou Pearlman story, and holy shit, it is mind-blowing what they went through. Like, how they were taken advantage of by that guy and why that guy died in prison is just fascinating, man. That episode is definitely way up there on my list as far as like things to check out to learn about. It's an older episode, but I love that. The first episode that we did with Bruce Valanche, we did two. Both of them are really nice. One we did live on stage. One we did, you know, a sit down like hour and a half interview. In the interview with Bruce Valanche, he talked about writing the Star Wars holiday special. It's just nerd gold. It just feels good just listening to him talk about that. He also wrote the Paul Lynde Halloween special, which is fascinating. And while he was working on that, he got to work with Margaret Hamilton, who played the Wicked Witch of the West. And she told him stories of her childhood of working in movies with W.C. Fields. So we got W.C. Fields stories from Margaret Hamilton, from Bruce Valanche in an episode, which is just fucking outrageous.
Wow.
That was super, super cool. And then I'll say the most physically intense episode we've ever done was the Office cast reunion at LA Comic Con. There were 10,000 people in the audience. I have never been on stage in front of more than 1,000 people. So that was fucking terrifying, and it was intense. It was very, very intense, and I'm a huge, huge Office fan, and because we had Kate Flannery and Oscar Nunez on the show, Kate at the time was doing Dancing with the Stars, and so they went to her first and said, Kate, we know we're going to do this Office cast reunion. The cast reunion was Kate Flannery. It'd be Kate Flannery, Oscar Nunez, Stanley, Leslie David Baker, who played Stanley, Toby Creed, Brian Baumgartner, and Phyllis together on stage. And so they asked Kate who she thought should host it. And she was like, oh, Stephen Blickman, Nighttime Show. And
that's awesome.
And it was, getting the phone call from LA Comic Con to ask to do it, we were like, I was losing it, man. And then getting on stage, luckily, you know, thank God I have funny writers because they wrote intros for, you know, for me to say for each of the people. And the intros were really funny and they got great laughs. And, the entire interview was maybe 20 minutes, but it was, what was cool is, and this is what was cool, Mike Glazer, who is so funny, we put him in the front row with a microphone, and we put Sarah Salthaus, another person who works on our show, is amazing, very talented, we stuck her like on a little podium stage thing way out in the middle of the 10,000 people with a microphone. And then during the interview, we would go, well, on the Nighttime Show, we like to take questions. So Sarah Salthaus, you're way back there. What do you got? What questions you got? And then, so she would ask a question from like 2,000 people back. And it was so fun and so intense. And I cannot wait until coronavirus stuff is done so that we can get back to being able to do big, giant, crazy shit again. Because that was really, really extraordinary. That was a lot of fun. That was a big one.
That's awesome. What a got adrenaline, you know, go from 1,000 people to 10,000 people. And not like 1,000 people is a, that's anything to sneeze at. You know, that's a lot of faces.
Dude, 1,000 people is a lot for me. Like,
oh, yeah.
When I recorded at the Ice House, it was 250 for the first show and 250 for the second show. And like, that was a lot. Like, that felt, you know, like a lot of people. It felt great. But 1,000 is a lot. But 10,000, I walked on stage, and you can watch it. Hot Topic live streamed our podcast, and I walked on stage, and I went, I hear we have some Office fans in the room, and everyone went, yeah, and like screamed back at me, and then I just went, all right, and I just sat down. I just sat in my chair. I was like, I'm done. I was going to do a whole thing. Hey, well, we've got a great show for you. I was, nope. I was like, I can't stand in front of all these people. I'm going to shit my pants.
Yeah. I need to go pick my bowels up. They're over there. They fell out of me.
God. Oh, my God. Yeah, my palms were just dripping sweat, but it was worth it. It was definitely worth it, you know?
Do you have any previews on what guests might be coming up, or is that all secret hush-hush stuff?
No, I can tell you one, because we just booked it. Oh, my God. Hang on. I just
George Lucas, he's back. Oh, shit.
No joke. While I'm been doing this with you guys for the last hour, I got an email from Lance Henriksen's manager saying that he's doing the show.
Nice.
So we're going to do it Friday afternoon. So that's a pretty big deal. That's pretty damn cool. Holy crap.
That's awesome.
Oh, I'm so happy. I'm happy we were here for you for that.
Seriously. Oh, my God. Oh, crap. That's going to be a whole thing. So that's very, this is very exciting. One other person booked for, because Friday is a record day for us. We are recording with Chloe Veitch, I think is how you say her name, V-E-I-T-C-H. Chloe is the star of a television show that's on Netflix. We have a bunch of rules we have to follow because we can't share the interview until Netflix gives us the thumbs up. But
I know this show. I know this show. I know it. The two...
Too Hot to
Handle.
Too
Hot to Handle.
Too Hot to Handle. That's the name of the show.
You can looky-looky, no touchy-touchy.
Oh, God. I just finished watching the whole season last night. It was her and the other, the main one that everyone was pissed off at the whole way through. Those were the two that I was like, oh, we got to try to do that. But we were trying to get someone from Love is Blind, after, you know, when that came out. It's always fun to try to get someone right in the middle of their whole thing, but
storm,
right. Yeah, like it's great if you can do that, but it's, you know, it's also fun to get people, you know, like, you know, after things have cooled off a little bit, they can say some real stuff. Like, we had Farrah Abraham on the show from Teen Mom, and Jesus, this woman,
she left the show pregnant again, which was wild. I mean, she's basically half rabbit. That's
dude. When Farrah Abraham came on the show, I will tell you just a quick little thing. Mike Black, our announcer, him and I went out to see a movie the night after we did the interview with her, and he said, "Steven, is this really what we want?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "This Farrah Abraham show, is this really what we're trying to do with our show?" And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, she contributes nothing to the world. Like, this is the last, like, this person's completely wrong for our show. Like, it got us huge numbers, but it was like, shouldn't we be trying to get like better, good people that are not. And I was like, oh, well, we will get somebody else for the next one. And the next interview after Farrah Abraham was the head of the L.A. Zoo, the guy who was the zoo director for the L.A. Zoo, the least controversial person ever. And we went to his zoo. We all smoked some pot. Well, not all of us, but me and Mike smoked some pot. And then we got a tour. We got to play with sloths. and we got to sit and ask questions about weird stuff, like has an elephant ever fought any other animals in the zoo, like, you know, stuff like that. And it was really fun. Like, we had a really, we had a good time. But Farrah Abraham, when she was on the show, just this is the quick Farrah Abraham thing. She comes on the show. She said something like, my goal in my future is to be more like Ellen DeGeneres, is to be like to host like an Ellen DeGeneres show or Oprah type show. And we were like, sure. What? Really? And she was, and then she said something like, everybody that I worked with on that show is a, on Teen Mom, they're all a bunch of fucking liars and assholes. And they're all trying to prove they have a, like a stronger pussy than me. Like, she just was saying just crazy, I don't know, just crazy shit. Like? Dude, everything she said was so inflammatory and crazy. And we finished the show, and I said to her, I walked her out to her car, and I go, hey, just real quick, you know, we're going to put this episode out, like, today. Are you comfortable with everything? Like, I just want to make sure that, like, you're good. And she was like, yeah, I gave you lots of good stuff. And I was like, no, I know.
Oh, I was there. Were you there?
Like, I just want to make sure that, like, there's nothing that you want me to cut out. And she goes, no, give the entire thing to everyone. Give the recording over to, like, Vulture and Radar and TMZ. Just, they're going to love everything I said. And I was like, okay. Okay. And I literally got off, said goodbye to her, got on the phone, called TMZ, and they were like, yes. And I was like, yeah, we just had an interview. We just did an hour-long interview with Farrah Abraham, and she said a bunch of stuff. And they were like, are you kidding me? Can we please have that? And we were like, yeah, I guess. You know, just credit us and stuff. And they were like, okay. And so, like, we sent it over to TMZ literally the next day. We were in 9 publications around the world, like Radar, Us Weekly, OK Magazine, Life and Style, TMZ. Like, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. And all the articles are different. They're all completely different. They're all about a different thing that's fucked up that she said during the interview.
That's insane. Her libel and slander attorneys, though, probably insist on the full unedited version being released. Probably helps in all the lawsuits that she gets caught up in, you know, for context.
She like, feeds off of negative energy and then uses it in the most fascinating ways, man. Like, you know, like, someone will write an article being like, Farrah Abraham left her child alone in a park while she went to eat food or something like this, and then she'll go, I'm raising an independent girl and you're mom shaming me. And you're like, what? Like, she found a way to make that fine. She'll just do whatever. It's like, if you're like, Farrah Abraham, you know, all she eats is beef jerky and apple cider vinegar, and she'll be like, don't fat shame me, you know, like, and people, it's like she finds a way to twist everything back on anyone who comes after her. It's, dude, it's crazy. She's a bizarre character.
She's a living Viggo the Destroyer from Ghostbusters 2, the way you've described her. You've been great giving us all this time. If people are listening to you for the first time, what's a good entry point? What would you recommend be the first thing people go listen to if they're listening to the Nighttime Show for the first time?
I think right now, one of the most important people to be listening to are smart people. That we've had a lot of very talented, very cool actors and actresses on the show. But if you go and check out the Nighttime Show, the first episode we ever put out was with Max Brooks, Mel Brooks' son. Brooks wrote World War Z and The Zombie Survival Guide, and he has been helping the U.S. government throughout this whole thing, and governments around the world deal with this pandemic. His insights from 4 years ago are absolutely fascinating. So just as much as they are now, definitely worth starting there and listening to that episode. But if you you know, are not into that and what you're into right now is just getting a good laugh, go to Pandora or iTunes and pick up Voices in My Head, which is my new stand-up album, and you can listen to it. And I do a lot of silly impressions and tell a lot of funny and fucked up stories, and it's a lot of fun. So
well, as long as they're fucked up.
Yeah, oh, they are. You get caught eating a chocolate dick in the Hustler store. You know, life just settles up for you.
Man, I appreciated that though. The hollow boobs versus the thick dick. I was making lunch, and I was like, yeah, homeboy's got it. I completely agree. You know, if you're going down that path, and you might as well fully commit. So
yeah, uh-huh. Who wants hollow boobs? Come on.
Empty calories.
Ugh, come on, guys.
Where else can people find you, Steven, on social media? Well, give us all the plugs.
Of course. You can get me on Twitter at Steven Glickman, S-T-E-P-H-E-N Glickman. It's the same thing on Instagram, S-T-E-P-H-E-N Glickman on Instagram. And then on TikTok, if you just look up Steven Glickman, S-T-E-P-H-E-N Glickman on TikTok, I'm posting a lot. I just recently posted my Snoop Dogg getting stoned with Snoop Dogg story, which is hilarious and sad and depressing, but also very funny. Worth checking out. And man, oh man, guys, if you're not on TikTok, I'm telling you, holy crap. The difference in the algorithms from and audience reactions from Instagram to TikTok, it's like Instagram feels like MySpace at this point. It is so crazy. It's so crazy. Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. I'm 41 years old. Like, I was like, why am I on a app that's made for children? But it is, once Kevin Hart joined and Will Smith joined, Kevin James, you know, I was like, all right, I think it's okay.
I'm glad you said that, though, because a part of me feels like I should have an orange vest on that says unaccompanied adult, you know, kind of like that you would have to do it like Chuck E. Cheese back in the day if you just came for the pizza or something. Yeah, that's how I feel about TikTok. Be like, yeah, I just like the lip sync, brother. That's all.
I am telling you right now, you can upload anything, you know, any comedy type clips or anything you want to something like that. And because it is inundated with so many people making these dance videos and the fucking lip sync shit, when you upload something original that is not those things, the algorithms of the website really push to you, and they push your video faster than other people's videos, and it's crazy. Like, to give you an idea, just an idea of video views. On Instagram, I have 187,000 followers on Instagram. It's a nice, big, happy following on there. For the most part, I do about 1.2 million video views a month through the gram. On TikTok, I do 6.5 million.
Holy shit.
I've been on Instagram for, what, 10 years? And I'm at 187,000 followers. I've been on TikTok since October, and I'm at 314,000.
Oh, wow.
So many people are moving. They're just moving from app to app. It's like everyone that was at Snapchat, which was very, very popular, they've all just moved over to TikTok. And being able to, like, upload comedy clips, like Theo Von uploaded a clip this morning on TikTok that I watched that was just hysterical. So it's cool. It's like, it's getting less creepy, which is good. Because the only reason I joined is because my girlfriend was like, if why are you not using this app? You should get on there. There's so many people on there. And I was like, that sounds like a terrible idea. And then I joined, and they were very nice and have been, you know, it's been good so far. So
it would just be nice not to have to drag my son everywhere I go, you know, if I want to do videos. Be like, no, I got a kid. It's cool. Like, I'm legit. Like, I'm okay to be here. And then push him out of frame and then bust the moves.
Exactly. It's fun that Rosie, like, seeing Rosie O'Donnell on TikTok is hysterical. Like, it's so, or Gilbert Gottfried just joined, and it's his daughter getting him to do.
See? That daughter was paid very well by Gilbert. Here's your $100, now get out of here, I got comedy to do, you know?
Yeah, like, it's like him redoing scenes from Aladdin. It's so funny. It's so bizarre, but worth it, definitely. So yeah, that's where I'm at. Those are the places I'm at. And then you can check out the Nighttime Show, but just by going to thenighttimeshow.com.
Stephen Kramer Glickman, you have been the most fun. Thank you so much for hanging out with us and giving us so much of your time today.
Thank you so much, and keep me posted so I can share it when it comes out. Hey, really, guys, thanks again. It was really, really fun. That was cool.
Thank you. It was our pleasure, really.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.